Try a free sample of berry pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait. Will this send me spiraling out of my routine?
Time to consult the online experts. One bite will destroy your metabolism. Drink butter coffee instead to kill cravings.
What? Is it really that bad? I had protein this morning, right? Ugh, but it looks so good.
Only eat after walking 10,000 steps.
Pie is only 2 steps from here. Am I overthinking again?
Fruit ruins
Never
insulin
eat after 7 p.m.
One cheat day.
Stop it!
They don't know your body. Only you do. Signos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear, just your signal. Get $10 off select plans at Signos.com. That's Signos.com with code SPARK. Signos.
Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
You're listening to Hit the Bell with Matthias Burbell on the Sports Grid Radio Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Hit the Bell with me, Matthias Burbell, your host. Woo! Big time fight card coming up. UFC Singapore. Get ready. Get up. It's time to go. Max Holloway's back in the cage, and I cannot wait to see him scrap Korean Zombie. God damn, I'm excited. Let's go. Makes me feel like I'm back on the islands, getting ready for a scrap. You like bang, brother? Let's bang. That's what I'm talking about right now, man. Max Holloway, woo! Gracie Technics in Honolulu, Hawaii, stand up. Let's go, Darren Yap. You better have your boy ready to go because I'm excited, man. Korean Zombie, is this his retirement fight? I have no damn clue. Might be, could be, should be, but let's get real. If Korean Zombie puts up a fabulous performance against Max Holloway, he is not retiring. He's gonna say, I have more fight left than me. I almost just beat a guy who's gonna be, you know, pound for pound best. This guy's gonna be champion one day again. You know, there's so many aspirations when it comes to Max Holloway. He's only 31 years of age. He has good fight years left in front of him. If Korean Zombie puts up a great fight, I'm pretty sure he's going to put the retirement speech on the rearview mirror, and he's going to think he could go after gold again. I'm throwing that out there right now because Korean Zombie took an ass whooping against Alex Volkanovski in his previous fight. And when you take an ass whooping like that, that rearranges your whole entire mind. That rearranges your thoughts, and you don't know what you're going to do. You don't even know what to do. You don't even know if you should be fighting anymore. You don't even know if you're good at your job anymore. And that's what happened to Korean Zombie. When he took a beating like that, he questioned everything about his profession to the point where he looked himself in the mirror and wondered if he should even do this anymore for his own safety. And those types of fights are going to happen. Imagine if Max Holloway went to the mirror and asked himself, should I retire right now after the beating that Volkanovski gave him in the third fight? Max got beat up. Max got beat up in that fight. Brian Ortega got beat up in that fight against Max Holloway as well. Fighters are going to get beat up sometimes. It's the worst thing that could happen. You know, we recently talked to Rob Font, right? You know, before his main event spot where he actually got his ass whooped. But during that interview, Rob said that he got beat up a couple times and he wasn't used to getting beat up. And that was different. But then what he did, he went back to the drawing board and got a massive finish. Got a massive finish that led him to get to this main event spot. But then, yeah, he kind of got beat up again. But that's the name of the game, guys. That's why you get into this business. You know, it's the fight game. Sometimes you're going to get beat up, but it's how you get back up after you get beat up. You know, what truly matters. You know, the heart of a warrior. You die on the sword. You live by the sword. You know, that's just the way that it goes. And I'm stoked for this fight. This fight has so much meaning for Max Holloway, you know, going to Asia and going to that side of the world, especially after the devastating fires that took place on Maui, that took countless amount of lives It's just devastating, and it's so sad. And there are so many Max Holloway fans on that side of the world. You know, Hawaii is dominantly Asian. You know, they have a great Asian culture over there, a very Hawaiian culture. But, you know, people from Japan fly over all the time. People from, from all parts of Asia fly over to Hawaii all the time. So Max has a following, and he loves to travel to that side of the world and enjoy himself on his leisure time. You know, he's made great fans over there. And when you look at one championship and the amount of Hawaiian fighters that fight over there, you know, in Singapore, like Angela Lee, you know, like Christian Lee, you know, champions over there at that fight promotion at one championship. You know, there's a lot of Hawaiians that tune into those fights, and there's a lot of Hawaiian fans in Singapore that tune into those fights. So you know that Max Holloway is going to go in there steaming. But at the same time, he's fighting Korean Zombie. So the Korean Zombie is going to have a lot of fans, obviously, because he is, you know, one of the top-notch Asian fighters that have ever lived. So it's going to be an awesome fight. You know, this is the type of fight that really gets me going, because I understand the magnitude of the fight when it comes to the fans, the intensity, and how many fans are very, very excited to watch this fight on that side of the world. I know that a lot of fans over here in America are wondering, oh, why is Max fighting Korean Zombie? This is terrible matchmaking. You know, sometimes this goes beyond that, in my opinion. And this is one of these parts where it goes beyond that. And this is the only fight on this coming fight card. You know, I've been talking about Max for about 5 minutes, and that's because he deserves it. You know, future Hall of Famer, the guy, how many title defenses in the featherweight division, sometimes being argued of being the best featherweight ever to live, you know, prior to Volkanovski being on this run and beating him 3 times. So, you know, that this is a fight game. Things change, but Max is definitely amazing. Korean Zombie is definitely amazing. And the fight card goes on. Anthony Smith takes on Ryan Spann. Giga Chikadze comes back after a 20-month layoff to take on Alex Caceres. Alex Caceres is 35 years old, and he's 7-1 in his last 8 fights. Let's go. This is Alex's biggest fight of his career. He has fought since 2008 professionally. I was in high school, graduating in 2008. That means this guy has been fighting professionally since I got my first diploma. That's absurd. You know, this guy is awesome. He's 35 years old, and he's ready to kick some ass. You know, this is a crazy fight. Everybody's taking Giga at minus 240. The market loves Giga. Obviously, he's a great martial artist, but so is Bruce Leroy, man. This guy can scrap. You know, he's not going to get in a grappling match with Giga Chikadze. This fight's going to be standing, and it's going to be banging. You know, plus 200 is tremendous value for Alex Caceres right now. I'm just throwing that out there. But, I got to bring this fight up before we turn the page, because, yeah, that's right. We got Nolan King, MMA Kings, MMA Junkie. That's right. He's jumping on right after this. I can't wait to chop up this fight card with him and also chop up the Ultimate Fighter finale last week, man. UFC was on fire last week, but we got to get to this before we move on. Aaron Blanchfield and Taylor Santos are also on this card. And I brought them up this late because, man, it seems like the UFC is putting him in the middle of the card. And that's absolutely crazy. This fight should honestly be a co-main event right now, even possibly a main event on this fight card. We're talking about a title eliminator type of fight with Aaron Blanchfield and Taylor Santos. Aaron Blanchfield coming off a big-time win against Jessica Andrade, and Taylor Santos coming off a title loss. You know, she went for the title against who? Against Valentina Shevchenko, and she lost a split decision. Isn't that insane? And this split decision was controversial. You know, Taylor Santos may very well be the champion right now if the decision goes her way. And the decision, like I said, was controversial. So, man, insane. Right now, Taylor Santos plus 125. You know, she's coming in as the underdog, and the price is actually moving. It was plus 125, and now it's moved to plus 135. And that, woo, there is some value with Taylor Santos. A lot of people love Blanchfield because of all the damage that she's been giving out for the last few fights. You know, the girl's 11-1 professionally. She knows how to scrap, but she hasn't fought the best of the best in the UFC just now. You know, she has not fought Valentina Shevchenko, that's for sure. Her best win is Jessica Andrade. And she got it done in one. Excuse me, she got it done in the second round, early in the second round. You know, Blanchfield has all the tools to be fantastic. She's a great grappler. She knows how to strike. She brings the pressure. She has good jiu-jitsu. You know, good fighter. But Taylor Santos, she's just a dog. You know, to put it straight, man, this girl could scrap. She could go to the ground. Brazilian jiu-jitsu, also striker. You know, she's from Brazil. You know she's got jiu-jitsu. But when you look at what she's very, very great in, it's her striking. You know, she's a great striker. And that's what's scary about her. You don't even think about her jiu-jitsu. You know, jiu-jitsu's been in her back pocket since day one. She's from Brazil. She grew up with jiu-jitsu. But she's a striker dominantly, man. You know, I love Talia Santos this weekend. The more I think of this, I think of Talia Santos. And we're not picking names, we're picking numbers. And Talia Santos plus 135. Let's roll. Max Holloway minus 800 against Chan Sung Jung, Korean Zombie plus 550. The price is insane right now for Max Holloway. You simply just can't play him. It's not even worth to put him in a parlay. You know, Chan Sung Jung, Korean Zombie plus 550. That's insane. You know, we just got to stay away from this fight and say that this fight will not go to the distance, because I think Max Holloway is going to put a whooping on Korean Zombie. He's going to rearrange his face. He's going to throw numerous amount of strikes. I know Max wants to beat his own record of the number of amount of strikes landed in a fight. You know, Max always plays around and flirts with that number. He did it to Calvin Kattar. He did it to Brian Ortega. Max likes to hand out ass whoopings. And this is definitely a fight where he could hand another one out. You know, look what he did to Arnold Allen. Look what he did to Yair Rodriguez. Look what he did to Calvin Kattar. Look what he did to Brian Ortega. You know, he jacks him up. He doesn't just beat him up, he jacks him up. So I expect another one of these for Max Holloway, especially as he's fighting with a heavy heart, you know, for Maui. And I'm going to end this segment with this, man, for the Hawaiians out in Maui and for the Hawaiians, all the Hawaiians out on the state of Hawaii. If you want to donate to the islands right now, this is where you need to do it. This is how you should do it. There's a lot of people asking for money out there, and there's a lot of people that you cannot trust. And this is one website that you can trust to send money to help the people of Maui. And that is Lahaina_Ohana_Venmo. Again, that's Lahaina_Ohana_Venmo. Send money their way. They need all the help they can get. You know, I know that they've had some help with resources over there over the last week, but these people need money right now. They need to get back on their feet. They need to start their rebuild, and they need to get going. So if you have any money to send to help the people of Maui, to help the people on the state of Hawaii, that would be very gracious and very grateful. And if you can't, we completely understand. You know, but if you do want to help, again, it is Lahaina_Ohana_Venmo, and they could use all the help that they can get right now, guys. With that said, we will be back right after this. We have Nolan King from MMA Junkie stepping up and in. It is time to talk about what happened last week at UFC 292, but we're also going to preview UFC Singapore and really get into this cage. All that and more with me, Matias Burbell, on Hit the Bell. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to Hit the Bell with Matias Burbell on the Sports Grid Radio Network. You're listening to Hit the Bell with Matias Burbell on the Sports Grid Radio Network.
What's up, fight fans? Welcome to Hit the Bell with me, Matias Burbell. What a segment we got lined up for you guys today with Nolan King from MMA Junkie and USA Today. Nolan has been everywhere, man. Bellator, UFC 292. He's covered the whole landscape of the MMA world. You can follow Nolan on Twitter at MMA_Kings. Nolan was actually following Kurt Holubel and his journey through The Ultimate Fighter. We didn't know who was going to be in the final at this time, but Nolan was fortunate enough to be covering Kurt through the whole damn thing. And man, what a trail of breadcrumbs that you gave us, Nolan. The last time we spoke to you, we had no idea who was going to be in the final, and we had no idea who was going to win the final. And what do you know? Kurt Holubel wins it, and he wins it in stunning fashion. And man, it also got emotional, you know, watching the buildup to him actually getting to the finale. Man, he got emotional even getting to the semifinal, and his family was so happy and so emotional. You could just tell that there was so much meaning for him to win this finale. It was awesome to see, and it was awesome that you got to cover it, bro.
Yeah, man, it was incredible. It's funny how things work out like that. Kurt Holubel actually was my first one-on-one interview that I ever did over the phone with an MMA fighter. So when he, you know, he had been in the UFC, I think it was around the time that maybe he was working his way back. He was about to go on Contender Series. So I stayed in touch with him and his team throughout that time. He had three fights in the UFC that ended up, he lost them all, but they aged pretty well. I mean, it was Shane Burgos, Thiago Moises, and Haoni Barcelos, who were all ranked, I think, at some point after they fought Kurt. So I stayed in contact with him over the years. And when he got casted, I, you know, kind of reconnected with them. And they were like, hey, like, we had this idea. What if we did some sort of thing every week where you, like, kind of did a behind-the-scenes thing? And I was like, honestly, it's a great idea. You know, I'd like to say I took credit for it, but actually it was something that they had pitched my way, and I thought it was great. And it worked out, obviously. Again, I'd like to take credit for picking the right guy, but he did all that himself. It's pretty crazy to see his road, his journey, and for what are the chances, too, that, you know, the finale fight would end up in my backyard. So pretty cool all around, and definitely a special moment and a special redemption for Kurt Hallebaugh.
That's awesome, man. And you're right. The fact that it actually took place in your backyard in Boston, Massachusetts, what are the odds of that? Wow, everything just falls right into place for you, and you deserve it. You know, you deserve it. You work so hard, and you it always shows behind your work, man. You pick the right guys to talk to. You talk to them in a great fashion. We get so much information from you. So let me ask you this. How hard was it for Kurt to kind of not tell you that he was in this finale, man? Like, did you know? Did he actually know, and you just had to keep it a secret? Or was he kind of like, you know, like having a big smile or like having a great reaction when you guys were talking every week?
Yeah, so I had heard some stuff going into the season about the way things had played out, not from him or his team, from some other sources. And so we never explicitly said it until it happened on the show. But I think he was under the impression that I kind of knew at least the basic outline of how things had played out during that season. So he was good about it. Yeah, I don't think there was really any issues there. You know, there was a few times he was, they must inform these guys like, hey, like, if somebody starts asking you to go down this road, just say, you know, try to pump up the next episode or have them tune in or whatever. So they were good with it. They did media interviews with the reporters in Vegas during the filming of the show. They did a media day out there where I'm sure, again, they were kind of instructed about how they're supposed to handle media things. So no, he was great. Really classy guy, very easy to work with, very humble, pretty much what you see, what you get on the show. You know, obviously he was very appreciative of the opportunity kind of to revive his career, which may have otherwise been, you know, kind of fizzling out. So, yeah, it was a great experience, and it was cool to be able to go through that every week. And it seemed like people at least gave people a little bit of a different perspective on kind of the show and how it operates as a well-oiled machine versus just what people see on TV.
Got scary for him in round one when Austin kept getting those takedowns. And it looked like he was not pulling away, but he looked more comfortable to start the fight. But next thing you know, Kurt turns it up and just, man, what a submission. Just what a submission. And the way that he actually transitioned into the submission was something so special, man. It was so great to actually get a finale like we did, not just with Kurt Hallebaugh and Austin Hubbard, but with Brad Katona and Professor Gibson, I'd like to call him. Holy smokes, man. What a great finale. It reminded me of of the Ultimate Fighter 1 and the opponents that we had to watch them, the competitors that we got to see back then, and how crazy that fight was and the fights were.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people maybe did not watch this season. I know people are gravitating more and more towards Contender Series versus The Ultimate Fighter if given the choice. But I will say, as somebody that's watched the last few seasons of The Ultimate Fighter in full, you know, since I've been with Junkie, I've certainly, I think I've watched pretty much every episode that's aired since I've been with Junkie. And then obviously the earlier on seasons before it kind of fizzled out in popularity. But this is one of the best seasons in terms of action that I can remember. There were some pretty big knockouts, some pretty big finishes, some craziness with Kurt Hallebaugh versus Jason Knight, and Hallebaugh versus Lee Hammond was pretty nuts too. Brad Katona versus Timur Valiyev was great. And then the finale fights, like you said, man, they were both phenomenal. Brad Katona versus Cody Gibson, one of the best fights of the year. $50,000 bonus fight of the night for each guy, and a tough finale. I don't know how many times that's happened. So good on both those guys. It's good that Dana White said that he's going to keep Cody Gibson as well. I think that's well earned. And then on the Hallebaugh side, yeah, man. I mean, for a while, I felt like part of the reason I appreciated Kurt so much and his abilities was the fact that I always felt like he was super underrated. Like, he would go outside the UFC and I'd watch tape on him and I'd be like, man, this guy's like putting it all together. He's got a jiu-jitsu background, but he's got these crazy power. And then you get to the UFC and, you know, he fought tough guys, but he kind of wouldn't look like himself either. So seeing what he did on the show and those three performances that he had, the third one being Austin Hubbard last Saturday, I felt like, you know, kind of the crazy guy on the street that's been screaming about how aliens are going to show up. And then the alien shows up and he said, see, I told you so. So we finally got to see Kurt Hallebaugh inside the cage, the form that I think is his actual form when he's not inside his own head, when he has got good preparation, when his personal issues are aside. He does an excellent job in the cage with confidence. And we saw that with his third finish and three fights through the bracket to win the Ultimate Fighter.
We are talking to Nolan King from USA Today, MMA Junkie. You can follow Nolan on Twitter at @MMA_Kings. He was following the Ultimate Fighter and followed the journey of Kurt Hallebaugh. It was great to see, and I can't wait to see what what future fights lie ahead for both Ultimate Fighter winners and Professor Gibson, man. But we move on. UFC 292 was lit. You got to be there. You got to feel the electricity in the arena. You know, Sugar Sean O'Malley knocks out Aljamain Sterling. What a finish. Ian Gary demolishes Neil Magny. That was fun to watch. And Zhang Weili, holy smokes, she looked dominant as hell. And I actually thought that Lemos had a chance. I disrespected Zhang Weili, man, because she is superb. Pound for pound, superb, man. What did you think of UFC 292?
Yeah, I thought it was great, man. And I think sometimes when you look at a card, right, like obviously the main event was the big thing everybody will always remember. It was very iconic. Biggest bantamweight fight in history in terms of the gate was insane. It was $7.something million, but then also, you know, Dana White saying that the buy rate was higher than any other globally than any other bantamweight fight ever. And I believe it, man. I think Sean O'Malley broke through as a star. We saw him really what he's capable of in terms of his reach, in terms of the social media exploding afterwards, in terms of his promotability. You see it through one simple action, which is the UFC releasing the full knockout sequence on social media immediately, putting the fight on YouTube. Those are things that we don't see, and those are things that, in my opinion, the UFC is already looking towards the future. They knocked it out of the park that night. They knew they had hit it, so what are they doing? They're going above and beyond to try to build brand exposure for Sean O'Malley by putting that out there. Give people something free now, try to capitalize on something even bigger later. So I think that really spoke to his star power. And the rest of the card was good. You know, I think sometimes if you were to just miss this card and wake up Sunday and open Tapology and go on and say, there was a lot of decisions on this card, it must have not been exciting, doesn't necessarily paint the full picture. I think we saw some really interesting matchups. I thought all the way from Gerald Meerschaert versus Andre Petrovsky, Cody Gibson versus Bracatona, which we just talked about, Hallebaugh, the Weidman-Tavares fight, despite Chris's injury, was a pretty good battle. And then all the way up, I mean, you know, some decent striking battles on the main card. I know Vera versus Munoz was maybe a little more technical than it was exciting. And then Ian Gary having his breakthrough performance as well, topped off by topped off by Zhang Weili defeating Amanda Lemos and showing just how good she is and how dominant she is in all facets of the game. So overall, I think it was a great card, and especially with that iconic moment sitting on the top, it will be forever remembered in UFC history as a special night.
I'm right there with you, man. I loved the card. I thought the card was fought with high intensity from the first fight to the last. I was highly entertained throughout every fight, man. Forget the decision. It seemed like there was knockouts coming the whole way, and I was on the edge of my seat for almost every single fight. You know, Damon Blackshear almost getting the finish at plus 180 was something special. He looked great in round one. I know he faded a little bit in round two, and then Mario ended up taking the victory, but that fight was fun, man. Pedro Munhoz also had a comeback, you know, in that fight, ended up losing a decision, but that was fun. And the Ultimate Fighter finale, I think, kind of set up the whole card, because those two fights were just so high level intensity and competition. You could feel how bad each fighter wanted it in those two fights. And then the rest of the card was just a great sequence of events, man. But like you said, it was a fun card to watch. And now we don't stop, Nolan. Man, we go to UFC Singapore, and when you look at UFC Singapore, this card is really, really fun. Max Holloway back into the cage with Korean Zombie, but also Anthony Smith, Ryan Spann, Giga Chikadze is back after a 20-month layoff. Like, holy smokes. And Alex Caceres, you know, a guy who's been fighting professionally since 2008. He's been, 7-1 in his last 8 fights?
And the guys look fantastic. He's 35 years old, and it seems like he's actually peaking right now. I have no idea who's going to win this fight. What do you think of UFC Singapore?
I think it's great. You know, I think sometimes when you see the UFC going to certain markets, you know that the time that the card's going to be on is not favorable for the American audience or the Western side of the world's audience. So when you see Singapore, I kind of assumed that maybe it would be one of those really top heavy cards where there's one main event and then the rest of the card's kind of subpar. But no, I mean, there's four relevant fights with contenders in it. There's a budding Asian star on the main card as well, given a pretty high profile slot on the main card. So I'm pretty impressed with the lineup that they put forth. You look at, you know, the second fight on the main card out of the six was Aaron Blanchfield versus Talia Santos, which, you know, could easily be a main event at the Apex or something. It has pretty big implications for that division. For that to be all the way down there is kind of surprising. And then, yeah, you mentioned it, like Chikadze versus Caceres, which I believe was the last fight added to the card, was a nice little boost. You got Smith versus Spann, which is kind of a rematch that has a little bit of heat on it. And then the main event, too. I mean, could be Korean Zombie's retirement fight. Anytime you get to see Max Holloway fight, he's one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world, regardless of his status as a contender rather than a champion. So I think the UFC's done well with this one. Selfishly, I'm happy that it's on in the morning. I love morning fights, so I'll be up and sitting with my coffee covering this one for MMA Junkie. But overall, great, man. I'm happy with it, especially considering it's an Asian market fight night that's turned out to be pretty stacked.
I'm with you too, brother. I like morning fights. It's a little extra early for me, so it's gonna be a hassle to get me up. But at the same time, you know me, living in Hawaii for as long as I did, Max Holloway's on. Can't wait to watch him. You know, but some questions I have revolving this card for you is, what's the point of the rematch between Anthony Smith and Ryan Spann? You know, when I see this fight, I know that it's a fun fight for the viewers, but we just watched it less than 2 years ago, and we saw Anthony Smith win handily, in my opinion. I know anything could happen in this division, especially at light heavyweight, but it seems to me like this is another win for Anthony Smith. Am I wrong?
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like in the last couple of months, we've seen the UFC book rematches more than they usually do. Usually they stay away kind of at all costs, right? Like, unless it's one of these scenarios where guys fought on the prelims and then all of a sudden they both took their separate journeys and they're contenders and they're really the only ones there. Maybe they'll rebook them, kind of viewing that first fight as old and irrelevant. But for the most part, the UFC does not like booking rematches. So for them to be on the slew recently of booking rematches that don't necessarily seem like they have to happen, like with this one with Smith and Spann, and they booked Michelle Waterson versus Marina Rodriguez recently, and they even booked Rodrigo Nascimento versus Dontel Mays, which, again, neither of those guys have ever been ranked. Neither of them have been in the Rodrigo's not been in the UFC for longer than maybe 3 years and a handful of fights, and he's fighting a guy that he's already fought. So kind of some strange things that the UFC is doing in terms of their rematches, and especially for a promotion that always very much avoided them. But at the same time, you know, I think in certain instances, they're not the worst thing in the world. It's just, it's like you said, I didn't necessarily think this one, outside of a little bit of a post-fight heat kind of exchange that they had after the first fight, I don't necessarily see this having much of a purpose other than just two guys that are ranked needing to jostle for position. So I guess it's fine. You know, they're both ranked. Like I said, they're moving around trying to get a slot. But yeah, it's kind of just super random to me off the top of my head.
The way I see this contract working is Anthony Smith thinking, all right, if I get the 40 wins in my career, I could call it a happy retirement. And and Ryan Spann's thinking, if I beat Anthony Smith, that means I could be a title contender because Anthony Smith beat John Jones, and that maybe takes me closer to a title. But at the end of the day, they both get paid, right? So it's always going to be a paycheck for both of them.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and if they're both confident in their abilities, like, you know, every time you win, you get a boost, you get an escalator in your pay. So, you know, maybe for obviously, you know, for both guys, there's somewhat of a purpose here. And Anthony Smith needs to win. You know, I think a lot, if he loses this, if he gets knocked out, you know, I'm not sure that the UFC will give him another fight. So, and for Ryan Spann, you know, he was on such a run and suffered a loss in his last fight. So maybe this is just, you know, once you look at a stretch of fights, if he has six wins and he's got one loss, or excuse me, six fights and one loss in that stretch, you know, people will minimize that loss and say, oh, well, you know, sure, he lost, but he rebounded and he's back on the horse and he's back going towards the title. So both very much pivotal fights for both guys. One guy that's trying to show that he's still got it, and the other guy that's trying to show that his run towards the title has not been, is not doing a U-turn. So, it's a fair fight. I think it'll be exciting. I don't think it'll go the distance, which is always nice. And for what it is, it's a decent fight, you know?
No, it is a fun fight, especially for the fans. You know, two guys that are good fighters. You know, they're definitely damn good MMA fighters. Are they championship-level fighters? Maybe not, but you know what? We don't need to see that all the time. And when this comes to high-level competition, high-level intensity, these two fighters are going to bring that, man. But you know who else is going to bring that same type of level of competition and intensity, and they both have title hopes and title dreams, and they're damn close to achieving it, is Aaron Blanchfield and Taylor Santos. And it's kind of weird that Aaron Blanchfield, you know, is minus 150. I think she's an excellent, excellent fighter, and I know that she has a lot of hype. And when I was in Vegas last time she fought, she did me well. You know, she's excellent. But so is Taylor Santos, and she's coming in as an underdog at plus 125. And her last fight came against Shevchenko in that title fight, which was a controversial loss for her, in my opinion. A lot of people thought that Valentina lost that fight to Taylor Santos, so she should actually even maybe be a champion right now, except Grasso's a champion. So, you know, lots of complications right now. And why plus 125 for Taylor Santos? You know, who do you have in this fight?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. You know, I think it's always easy for me to sit here and think about things as they stand right now. Like, for example, Aaron ripped through Jessica Andrade, but we've seen Jessica lose quite a bit. So, did that aid, that win did not necessarily age well. Versus, I think for Taylor, she's not getting the respect that she deserves because of Aaron's, you know, breakthrough sort of performance last fight. So I think it's a pretty even fight. I think it's interesting. I think Aaron, for the most part, especially when it comes to any sort of grappling or clinch exchange, has looked just absolutely phenomenal. I think her striking defense still needs some work. I get a little bit, you know, she seems to kind of lead with her head sometimes. I'm sure she's aware of that. It's one of the things she's working on. She's so young and still doesn't have a ton of fights under her belt, especially not at the UFC level. But for Taylor Santos, she looked great against Valentina Shevchenko that fight. Super close, suffered an eye injury, which who knows how much that played into the final outcome. And what she was able to her output in the cage. So I love this fight. It's kind of unfortunate that it's buried on this card. Like I'm never going to complain about a deep UFC card, but I definitely think when it's a fight like this being, you know, all the way below Rinya Nakamura versus Fernie Garcia, it just seems a little bit odd to me that the UFC would go this route. Now, I know Taylor Santos can't get in the United States, or she's choosing not to because her coach can't. So that's posed some problems, you know, that the UFC probably has to work around. But yeah, it definitely seems like it went from Aaron Blanchfield, Taylor Santos, two fighters that seemed like they were going to headline, and now they're being buried, you know, on a card that's going to air at, their fight will air at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time in the States. They need to do something big. Both of them need to make a statement. I think really a win just here for either person is quite a statement, just because it's such a great matchup with two talented fighters. But if one of them can go out there and somehow finish the other one, I think this will really position them well to get the next title shot. We'll see. Obviously, there's a fight coming up with Rose Namajunas and Manon Farreau as well. We'll see how that goes, how that plays out. But I'm assuming this has got some pretty big implications to it, as does the fight next week in France.
I'm 100% with you. I'm 100% with you. I think this fight, definitely the winner will most likely get a title shot. But like you said, the Fiorot fight coming up next week is huge as well. This fight card is fun right now, man. And that's why it's so fun. It's buried in the card, but that's high level intensity right there in the middle of a card, man. I love when you have these types of high level intensities, you know, fights in the middle of a card, because I think it just builds up the rest of the card. You know what I mean? Kind of like the Ultimate Fighter finale that we had. That was kind of buried in the card as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no doubt. You know, I think it's you can always find me. I'm talking about me. I can always find something to complain about with every card. And with this one, I just hope it gets the respect. I hope that the people out there that watch this card still talk about it, that it's still something that a lot of people see, that it's still something that when we walk away from Saturday, I mean, look at the card as a whole. Like, there's no fight on this card, in my opinion, that has more title implication or just is generally as interesting as the Blanchfield versus Santos fight. Sure, Max Holloway can really instill himself again as kind of the number one guy, but I'm not sure that they're going to be, you know, we seem like we know who the next challenger is going to be in Ilya Topuria. So it doesn't necessarily have much of an impact. Smith and Spann are still a stone's throw away from, you know, three stone's throws away from a title shot. And then you obviously have Chikadze and Caceres, who are both kind of building kind of in the middle tier of the rankings pack. So this is the fight. I mean, this is the one who's been five rounds, you know?
You're 100% right. It's disrespectful as hell. How the hell are they down there? You know, I just got hit by a rock in the back of the head, you know, from somebody up there in heaven telling me, yo, bro, you're like, yeah, you're right. You're 100% right. This should be the co-main event, dude. Without a doubt, it should be a co-main event. What the hell's going on?
Yeah, it's crazy. Initially, the plan was to do Aaron versus Ferro as the co-main event in France. And then the UFC kind of did a little scramble at the last second, with Rose Namajunas finally kind of deciding what she wanted to do and letting them know that she wanted to fight in that division. So it wasn't even initially the UFC's plan to do this fight. It seemed like they were going to do a pretty clear-cut number one contender fight with Aaron and Mano, and then ultimately scrambled. But you would have thought, again, I'm not necessarily sure why this isn't the co-main event. Is it something to do with, you know, I don't know, just the market or whatever? They, you know, Anthony Smith, former title challenger, maybe he's more of a familiar name to people over there. They're trying to sell tickets. But it's weird. I would love to hear an explanation, though I'm sure we'll never get it, you know?
Yeah, you're right. But then again, we'll watch them fight, and that'll be that, and we'll move on, dude. Yep. that's the way that it goes. And the way that the UFC and all fight promotions are spitting out fights right now, it never stops, man. You know, final question for you on the way out. O'Malley and Ian Garry, you know, both these guys are superstars, and they're going to be rising faster than man. They're going to rise fast. You could just tell. But which one do you think gets closer to that Conor McGregor status? Who gets to that Conor McGregor status next? Ian Garry or Sugar Show O'Malley, man? Because it looks like Ian Garry is right around the corner.
Yeah, I think it has to be Sean O'Malley, just because I think he brings such a unique personality where I'm almost curious if Ian Garry will lose a little bit of the popularity because he's similar to Conor in a certain regard. And again, it's hard to figure out how much is he's actually similar to him, or if people are just saying, oh, it's a brash Irish guy that talks a lot of trash and uses similar expressions, or if people are you know, actually taking what he's saying and saying he's similar to Conor. So it's a little confusing there. I'm not necessarily sure he has that level of, at this point in time, the level of banter and debate amongst fans surrounding him that seemed to follow Conor, it's seeming to follow Sean O'Malley. And when they prove people wrong, those sort of conversations only get louder and more passionate. And I think ultimately that's what drives interest, and that's what drives money, and that's what drives stardom. So for Sean O'Malley, I think right now, outside of John Jones, I would say that he's probably the biggest draw in the UFC. You know, maybe Israel Adesanya would have something to say about that as well. He's underratedly popular, like from the metrics we can see. I don't think necessarily people realize, globally speaking, how big Izzy is and how popular he is. But I think Sean's either there or he's already kind of surpassing him just with the way things went on Saturday. I really think that just took things to another level. The possibilities are kind of endless. The different crowds and of fans that he can tap into, the younger crowds, the gaming crowds, the you know, just the people that kind of maybe you're tuning in for the first time and they're like, oh shit, that guy's got face tats and he's got pink hair and he throws sick spinning shit. You know, there's just a lot that comes with him, and he's already covered some ground. He's already very popular. So if I had to choose between those two, I would say that Sean O'Malley is my fairly safe bet.
It's fun. It's fun stuff. And you know what? You're right. Ian Garry reminds me too much of Conor McGregor. Did it make you cringe a little bit, the things that he was saying in the presser all week? You know, I know that he's a showman, and I know that he's trying to get to that next level, but man, it was almost like a spitting mimic, a spitting image of Conor McGregor doing the same stuff and saying the same things. He took the same lines as he did. You know, some people like it, but I'm kind of like, man, you got to come up with your own stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting because I like wonder how much Conor is just an influential person when it comes. It's like, is it just ingrained in Irish MMA fighters now? Is this just something we're going to see? You know, maybe there's some certain things that like Muhammad Ali or, you know, some of the boxing greats or even some of the early UFC guys have said or done that maybe it's become part of our culture and we don't even really recognize that where those lines are coming from. But yeah, I get it. I mean, you know, when he was saying you'll do nothing and you'll say nothing, it was very, very much like, okay, like reminiscent of Conor. And I know somebody even went online and kind of threaded them together of Conor saying one thing and then Garry saying the same thing in the presser. So I think it's something he's going to be aware of for his branding, but maybe it's just so instilled in who he is that it's hard to shake. But I think it would benefit him to just try to be, you can be similar, but got to be different too.
Yeah, it works. That's for sure. It definitely does work. Yeah. He ran, you know, Neil Magny made a terrible mistake in the presser saying what he said. I think it set him up, you know, for failure psychologically, because man, is Ian a good talker, and is he good at actually, you know, if he smells blood, or if if his opponents show any weakness in this mental game, it looks like Ian Gary is ready to go to war now. You know, no more Mr. Nice Guy.
Yeah, I mean, Neil Magny shot himself in the foot, you know, when it came to that trash talk. I think going into that week, I just figured him not to be bothered. And I think generally speaking, it wouldn't have been an issue if he hadn't have said what he said. You know, the way that he said it, it was just, if I was a PR person for him, I would just be having a heart attack, because it's probably one of the worst things that he could have said, whether he meant it or not. You know, it can be debated or whatever. We really haven't heard an explanation of what he meant since then from him. He started to try to give it at that press conference, and he just got totally bulldozed by a barrage of Ian Gary insults. So it's for a guy that's had a pretty clean image and was pretty inoffensive and seemed like fans liked him. I think this is something Neil Magny's going to always have to deal with now, is people saying stuff to him about this, whether it's online or whatever. But Ian Gary, man, he can talk. Some of his answers afterwards in the press conference, I was very impressed with. They were very thoughtful, kind of sometimes went in different directions than you would think you would go when asked a certain question. So good on him. I think he's doing the right thing. And ultimately, I think he's the star that the UFC needs in that market to at least bring the show back there. You know, he's just at this point in his career, he's the size of, and he's got the size and the magnitude of a star that they can have a headline in Dublin, who's not too big for a Dublin show. But also as somebody they can take there and really make it seem like a big deal. So I'm excited to see that when that inevitably happens, probably next year.
Woo! Dublin stand up. That's exciting. I can't wait for that to happen, man. That's craziness. That's craziness, man. And it'll be fun. That's for damn sure. Well, you know what? I've taken too much of your time, brother. I want to thank you for coming on the show. It's always a blast having you on. And fans, again, you can follow Nolan King at USA Today MMA Junkie and go on Twitter. Go find him at MMA_Kings. The guy's covering the world of MMA. Bellator 300 is right around the corner. I know Nolan's going to be keeping us up with all things MMA, man. Thanks so much, Nolan. Always a pleasure to have you on the show, brother.
Yeah, anytime, brother. Take care.
You're listening to Hit the Bell with Matias Burbell on the Sports Grid Radio Network. You're listening to Hit the Bell with Matias Burbell on the Sports Grid Radio Network.
What's up, fight fans? Welcome back to Hit the Bell with me, Matias Burbell. This show has been rolling. Man, we've talked to Nolan King from MMA Junkie. We've been chatting UFC 292, which was on fire last weekend. But now we move to UFC Singapore, where Max Holloway will be headlining his card against the Korean Zombie. Awesome fight. And man, I got to bring on this guest, because what better guy to have on this show than the guy who's covered Max Holloway at length. He has covered his whole entire UFC career from start to finish, man, all the way in the island of Oahu on Hawaii, man. We're talking to Rob DeMello, KHON2 sports director in Honolulu, Hawaii. He joins Hit the Bell for not the first time, man. He's been on Hit the Bell lots of times when Hit the Bell started on Hawaii. And now he joins us again. What's up, Rob? Welcome back to the show, brother. Aloha.
What's up, bro? It's good to hear your voice, man. We miss you out here in the island.
Man, I miss the islands, man, and I miss talking to you, bro. I gotta say, We always chopped it up and chopped MMA up, the Hawaiian scene, and the Hawaiian scene is always on fire. If it's not Max Holloway in the UFC, it's other local fighters everywhere else around the world, man. And Bellator 300, right around the corner in San Diego, it might not be Hawaii, but you know what? There are a lot of Hawaiians in San Diego. And now we get Alimaleh McFarlane over there in San Diego and Kai Kamaka and Max Holloway this weekend. Lots of Hawaiians fighting very, very soon.
Yeah, man. I mean, shoot, that's the way it is out here in the islands. They're always pumping out talent. And, I mean, it goes back decades and decades. And you go to the Super Brawl and Icon Sport Days. And really, you know, when it comes to the minor league promotions, Hawaii was a breeding ground. And that's why at any time of the year, in any year that you're in, there's going to be a handful of Hawaii fighters that are making names for themselves. And 2023 is no different.
The fight game is always with Hawaii. That's for damn sure, man. Big time fight for Max Holloway coming up in Singapore against Korean Zombie. First question for you about this fight. Do you think Max is fighting with that same fire? You know, this is the 32nd time he's fighting in this cage professionally. And some people are thinking, does Max still love the sport as much as he used to? Does he still want to become the featherweight champ after Volkanovski beat him 3 times? You know, where do you see Max right now? How hungry do you see him going into this fight?
He's hungry, man. And, you know, I spoke to him right before he left for Singapore. And one of the questions I asked him, you know, was pretty much that was, when you look at your career, the last time you fought in Singapore, he was riding a 2-fight losing streak early in his career. He's going up against Will Chope. And I remember interviewing him at that time back in 2014. And he said, this is my pink slip fight, man. If I don't win this, I'm out of the UFC. There's no way they're keeping this young fighter at 145 pounds with 3 straight losses. So he was fighting with his career on the line. Obviously, he was able to get that win that started the winning streak that now has become legendary and would probably get him into the Hall of Fame one day and become a champion and all that. And now, fast forward 9 years later, and I asked him, I said, man, look, all the things you were fighting for back in 2014, and that's a spot on the roster, which will then hopefully get you fights against ranked opponents, which would get yourself ranked as well and become a champion one day and build this legacy. These are all things that you've accomplished now. So now you go back to Singapore. What are you fighting for now? And he pretty much made it simple. He said, I'm fighting for my legacy. There's still so much more that I want to accomplish. Yeah, I'm a former champion, but I want to be a multiple weight class champion one day. I want that BMF title. I want to shatter all the significant strike records in the UFC, which he already holds, and he just wants to add to that. He wants to end his career with 5,000. And you know, when you look at what he's fighting for, I think a lot of people understand that it's going to be difficult for him to get another shot at Alexander Volkanovski if he's the featherweight champion. But the way Max sees it is that he's made a name for himself. He's a legend in the sport. If he keeps winning, they can't deny him. And if that means he has to move up to go get another title, if that means BMF, Gaethje right there, whatever it takes, he just wants to keep pursuing the ultimate goal. And that's when it's all said and done that he's remembered as one of the greatest fighters of all time. And so from his point of view, there's a lot to fight for in Singapore against the Korean Zombie.
Oh, it's exciting. And it's exciting to hear you talk about him like that. And to see where his hunger is at right now. You know, after he loses to Volkanovski 3 times in a row, you know, the second one being massively controversial, I had him winning the second fight. A lot of people had him winning the second fight. That's why they actually, you know, fought for a third time. But the third one obviously did not go his way, and that was definitely one of the worst losses in his career, in my opinion, because he got beat up. And you don't see Max Holloway get beat up a lot, you know, in all of his MMA career. You know, even the fight against Dustin Poirier, I don't think he got beat up. It was a competitive fight. It could have gone either way. Both guys got smacked up. But this, you know, that time around with Alex, it was just a different story. And some people were wondering, you know, where's Max going to go from here? Because Alex always says, you know, he wants to keep both divisions moving. And then he goes up in weight and loses to Islam Makhachev. He comes back down, defends the throne, does it in stunning fashion against Yair Rodriguez. And the division is still Alex Volkanovski. But like Alex always says, Rob, you know, he always says he doesn't want people to fight Max because Alex Volkanovski knows how damn good Max Holloway is. And he's kind of taken away these contenders that Alex Volkanovski can beat up. And Max is beating them up instead. So it's just a very, very weird time at the top of this featherweight division. Do you think Max Holloway becomes featherweight champion again in that division? Or do you think that he ends up actually moving up in weight before that ever happens again?
Now, is he talented enough to be a champion again at 145 pounds? Absolutely. You know, because at, to the point that you're talking about, I mean, have we ever seen a division like this? The only time I could ever think of is maybe John Jones, Daniel Cormier, where the champion has the edge over the challenger and that challenger has had multiple chances at him and not able to get it done. But no one below that person can get past that person, right? No one can get past that challenger that just can't get past the champion. I mean, that's the only really other time that I could think of where, I mean, you look at the division that he's cleared out, right? I mean, even Yair got a title shot after losing to Max, right? I mean, that's where we're at this point, is that there's nobody left for Alexander Volkanovski to fight. So, it might be one of those situations where Max could end up getting an opportunity again just because he's clearing out the division and there's no one left for Volkanovski to fight. And at the end of the day, you need to keep making fights or else, you know, then definitely the division comes to a standstill. But, I think it's clear that Alexander Volkanovski has Max's number. But with that being said, as you mentioned, you know, the first fight, I think a lot of people thought controversial. The second fight, very controversial. And then the third fight was one that was dominated by Volk. And so is it out of the realm of possibilities that Max can beat Alex? I don't think so, because I think a lot of people thought that he won the second fight. And it shows that if things go his way, Max can win that fight. The big question is, will he get another opportunity? Because that doesn't happen. You don't lose to a guy three times and then get a fourth time, right? So I think we're just going to have to wait and see. And all Max can do is just keep fighting, keep winning, keep being spectacular. And then at some point, it's going to be out of everybody's hands. And you know, maybe he finds himself back in that title picture.
We are talking to Rob DeMello from KHON2 Sports in Honolulu, Hawaii. He is the sports director over there. Rob has been chopping up the MMA scene for a long time, has covered Max Holloway at length. The guy knows it all when it comes to Hawaiian MMA, man. And we're chatting right now, Max Holloway, Korean Zombie. It's a damn good time over here, especially when we're talking Max Holloway. You know, he's fighting the Korean Zombie this Saturday. And lots of people were saying, what does this fight do for Max? And lots of people were actually giving the UFC a lot of backlash, wondering why the hell would they even book this fight? I know that this is Korean Zombie's retirement fight, but a lot of people think that Max Holloway is going to smoke him and rearrange his face the same way he's rearranged so many faces in the featherweight division. You know, look at Brian Ortega, for example. Look at Calvin Kattar. You know, Dana White sent Calvin Kattar immediately to the hospital after the beating that Max Holloway gave him because of all the shots that he took to the head. You know, it's dangerous stuff when you fight Max Holloway. You have to be well prepared. And when I think about Korean Zombie, I think of the beating that he took against Alex Volkanovski, where he pretty much nearly retired after the beating that he took because Volk rearranged his whole entire frame. He rearranged his mind. You know, he took his soul, and now he wants to fight Max Holloway. I commend Korean Zombie for wanting to go out on top, you know, die on his sword. And I love that, you know, that it goes to show exactly who Korean Zombie is. But in this case, some people think that the UFC needs to protect guys like Korean Zombie in this case. What do you think of the whole Korean Zombie shouldn't be fighting Max Holloway? Max Holloway stands at minus 800 favorite in Vegas right now. You know, a lot of people think that this fight's going to be done really quickly, not because it's going to be a finish, but because of damage itself.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it goes back to the question of, well, then who would Max Holloway fight at this time, right? And so I think it's one of those situations where Max wants to be active. You look around at 145 pounds, who is there to fight that he hasn't already beaten? And really, the only person on that list is Alexander Volkanovski, as the time of the booking took place, right? Now, there are a couple other guys in the division, but the timing doesn't match out. The schedule, they're fighting along the time that this is being booked, and therefore they're not going to be ready to fight Max at the time. And so Max wants to be active, and at the end of the day, these are two legends in the game, and these are two respected fighters. And, you know, I'm as soon as they made the fight, that's exciting, man, because the Korean Zombie can take a beating, and Max delivers beatings, and anything could happen if a guy can survive, right? And Max isn't a guy known to end fights, right? I mean, that's probably been the biggest criticism of his career, especially since becoming a champion, is the amount of decisions that he's forced. And so if you look in that realm, if the Korean Zombie is, he earned that name for a reason. If he can stick around, anything can happen, right? And so I'm excited to see it, man. I'm excited to see this fight, and if Max wins, then everyone's right, and that's what was supposed to happen. And if it ends up being a war, then hey, cherry on top, we all get to see an awesome fight. But I think at the end of the day, everyone just wants to see Max Holloway fight. He wants to see himself be active, and this just happens to be the fight right there.
It's a fun fight. I love it. I'm not a hater on it whatsoever. I love the fact that Korean Zombie took this fight, and I love the fact that they gave it to him because he deserves to actually ask for what he wants. If he asks for it, give it to him. You know what I mean? That's who Korean Zombie is. And it's for the fans, first and foremost. And we all know how much of an impact Asia has on Max. We see him travel, to that side of the world so much and enjoy himself. He puts it on his social media. We don't see Max traveling to a lot of other places. It seems to me like one of his favorite places to travel to is Asia. So why not go back over there and put on a show for the fans? And I'm sure Max has a lot of fans over there in Singapore and around Asia. Am I wrong, or what do you think?
No, I would think so, absolutely. And you've been here in Hawaii. There, the infusion of Asian culture in Hawaii is very strong, and there are many travelers from Singapore throughout the year. And so I'm sure Max has picked up fans along the way. And I do think that maybe there is something along the lines of the Lee family in ONE Championship based in Singapore. Christian and Angela have had so many fights up there. And they've picked up fans along the way, and so they follow their careers. They know that Max trains with them at times. They know that they're all from the same island, and so he probably picks up fans that way. But I think Max Holloway's at a point of his career where he can go to the moon, and there's fans of Max Holloway, right? No matter where you go, Max is going to have fans because he's one of the fan favorites because of the way that he fights, because of the way he carries himself. And so I don't care where you go, Max is going to be a fan favorite.
Rob, as a guy who's covered Max for a long time, just along with you, man, as a fan of his, I drool of when I see the matchups in the lightweight division, and also the BMF title. Like you said, he wants to go after the BMF title, go against Justin Gaethje. That's just another amazing fight. And if you told Justin Gaethje, hey, you want to fight Max Holloway next for the BMF title to defend it, I think Justin Gaethje would be the first one to say, hell yeah. You know what I mean? Like, absolutely. You want to fight guys who are going to be future Hall of Famers like Max Holloway. And when I look at the lightweight division, man, I see, obviously, I don't want to see Dustin Poirier again, but I see Beneil Dariush. I see Rafael Fiziev, Michael Chandler. But there's a guy I see really, really at the top shining, when it comes to Max Holloway. I'm sure Max sees it as well. And that's Charles Oliveira, a guy who he's beat, in the featherweight division, with a quick stoppage. He has finished him. Doesn't matter how he finished him, but he finished him. When you see a guy like that who's going to be fighting for a title next, his next fight's going to be against Islam Makhachev in Abu Dhabi, Charles Oliveira going for that lightweight title yet again, there's so many different possibilities for Max Holloway. I am sure Charles Oliveira wants to defend his throne maybe against Max Holloway, a guy who he wants to avenge that loss to. What do you think?
Absolutely. I think for a long time, there's been two names that you figured that by the end of it, these are two fights that are probably going to happen just because there's history, because they fought before. The first is Conor McGregor. Obviously, as each passing day goes on, it becomes less likely. Every time it seemed like, oh, they're lining up, this could happen, then, Conor's inactive, or it just doesn't work out, or Conor's going after a different opponent. He went, with Conor, anything, right? I mean, there's so many different layers to it. And then the other is Oliveira. Like you said, they fought at 145. Max got a victory early in that run to getting him a UFC championship shot, which then got him the title. And so, absolutely, I think that a fight at 155 there makes a lot of sense and would probably happen by the time that each fighter retires. The one question I have about Max fighting at 155 is, I'm sure everyone notices this, but, I mean, Max has completely altered his physique. I mean, you go back and you watch a Max Holloway fight from even 2018. He looks like a completely different person. I mean, even his facial structure is different because of the way that he is out of camp, the way that he carries himself now when he's not fighting. This is a dude that probably at one time was walking around, like, legitimately at close to 190 pounds and cutting down to 145, and now he walks around probably at 175, 170, something like that. I mean, he is lean. And so him fighting at 155 is a lot different now than it was before. And so it's going to take some time for him to regain some of that mass and be able to fight with it, in my opinion. So I think it would be interesting seeing him go to 155, because like I said, I mean, just go back and watch Max's career leading up until the last couple of years. I mean, he looks completely different, and I don't think enough people talk about that. The training that he does at Tactical Strength and Conditioning with Darren Yap here in Honolulu, they completely altered his walk around weight, his physique, and everything. And so I'd just be interested to see what the strategy would be and how long it would take for him to feel confident and comfortable to fight at 155 pounds. But again, we're just going to have to wait and see.
Last question on the way for you, Rob, on the way out, man. Always a blast talking to Rob DeMello from KHON2 Sports in Honolulu, Hawaii. He is the sports director over there. We are chatting local sports right now, local MMA. We are rolling. Man, there's a big-time MMA card coming for Bellator 300 on the way out, man. We know we have Lemele McFarlane, who's going to be chasing that gold, who's fighting against one of her great friends in Liz Carmouche. Crazy fight right there. Obviously, the implications with their friendship, you know, awkward stuff. But also, Kai Kamaka gets rescheduled, thank God, because he needs to get paid, you know, against Henry Corrales in San Diego. Isn't that pretty cool? Bellator 300 in San Diego. We know there's a big Hawaiian community down there in San Diego, and we know it's also a flight away over the pond from the island all the way to San Diego, man. What do you think of this fight card for the Hawaiians?
Yeah, it's going to be great. And those are two of the premier fighters in Bellator from the state of Hawaii. Sumiko Inaba, another, not on that card. But when you look at what Bellator is pushing out as far as the Hawaii fighters go, Kai Kamaka III getting an opportunity at a ranked opponent, number 10 in the Bellator featherweight rankings. And so a victory right there puts him in the picture, puts him in the conversation. And he's a guy that razor-thin decision losses have altered his record, right? I mean, this is a guy that's, I think he's at 11-5 right now, and five of those losses, I mean, maybe three of them, if you ask majority of the people, thought that he won those fights, right? And so this is a guy that is just razor thin from already being in that Bellator title picture. So this is a huge fight for him. And then obviously you mentioned Lemele McFarlane. We don't know if there's even going to be a fight after this, right? She went into her fight in Honolulu against Kana Watanabe saying that, hey, this was it for me. If I don't win this fight, I'm going to walk off into the sunset. If I win this fight, I want to fight for the title. One last crack hold. She's the very first champion in that weight class at Bellator. There's an opportunity to regain that title. And if, let's say, she wins it, who knows what happens? I don't know if she ever defends it or if she decides, okay, I'll keep fighting until I don't have this title anymore. We all know it's difficult, and we've seen it time and time again, to have one foot in retirement and one foot in the sport of MMA. Not too many people have been able to do that successfully, but Lemele McFarlane is going to attempt to do it against someone that she knows very well. Liz Carmouche obviously knows her very well because of their training together for so many years. Either way you look at it, I think it's going to be a fun fight, and it's one that Lima definitely deserves, especially what she did for Bellator and what she did for that weight class and being the very first champion.
Woo! We have just chopped it up, Rob. It's always a blast having you on the show, man. It's been too long, man. I got nostalgia right now hearing you chopping it up and getting us ready for Bellator 300 and obviously for Max Holloway and his upcoming bout at UFC Singapore, man. Again, fans, this is Rob DeMello from KHON2 Sports in Honolulu.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Workplace stress is now a leading cause of declining mental health, with 61% of the global workforce feeling it more than ever. You can't escape work, but you can take small steps to care for yourself. A walk, some sun, a favorite song. Therapy is one of those steps, ongoing support to build resilience for whatever your day throws at you. Balance is tough. Getting help shouldn't be. Visit BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com today for 10% off your first month.
He's the sports director over there. Go check him out. Go check out KHON2 Sports and follow Rob DeMello, man. Always a pleasure to have you on, Rob. Always, man.
My pleasure, bro. You take care of yourself. Much aloha, my man.
You're listening to Hit the Bell with Matias Burbell on the Sports Grid Radio Network. Come on, man. And with the local DBC news. You're listening to Hit the Bell with Matias Burbell on the Sports Grid Radio Network.
I always feel great when I talk to Rob DeMello from KHON2 Sports. Man, that guy knows his stuff, and that guy knows his Hawaii MMA. He gets me ready to go. It makes me feel like I'm back on the islands of Hawaii. We are rolling right now. UFC Singapore. Can't wait for Saturday morning. I really can't. Like, it's going to be on fire. Big-time fights. Big-time matchups. Lots of nostalgia for me, you know, with the Hawaiian fighting on there. And also Bellator 300 coming up in San Diego. Ali Malaya McFarlane on the radar right now. So is Kai Kamaka III. Cannot wait to see them scrap in San Diego for Bellator, man. It's going to be great. We move on, though. You know, this is going to be fantastic stuff coming up with the UFC and in the world of MMA with Bellator as well. But we move to the U.S. Open because next week the U.S. Open starts. And you know we're going to talk some tennis. I cannot wait for the U.S. Open to start, man. Especially with all the drama going on right now. And everything is just so competitive. You know, when you look at the world of tennis right now, let's just look at the men's side right now. Plus 120 for Djokovic to win the tournament. Plus 175 for Carlos Alcaraz to win the tournament. Daniil Medvedev stands at plus 900. Yannick Sinner, plus 1200 for the Italian, Yannick Sinner. I got to say, that's tremendous value for a guy who just won a big tournament just recently in Montreal. You know, Yannick Sinner. In Toronto. Yannick Sinner coming in hot at plus 1,200. I think that's the play right now, guys. If we're talking about value, if we're talking about swinging for something that we could actually hit with a guy who really, you know, we don't really have him on the radar on the major scene just yet. And this guy is definitely a guy who's capable of winning a major as long as he gets the right matchups. You know what I mean? Like, Yannick Sinner does not do well against Medvedev. And Yannick Sinner does not do well against Djokovic. You know, we haven't seen him play Djokovic many times. So, weird matchup right there. But I never want to see Yannick Sinner play Medvedev. You know, for some reason, he just does not do well against Medvedev. But let's say it's Yannick Sinner versus Carlos Alcaraz, you know, at any point in this tournament. Don't circle Alcaraz right away. You just simply can't. Sinner has beat him three times already. You know, this is one of his top-notch rivals when it comes to Alcaraz. Alcaraz and Sinner have been battling for many years, and they know each other's games. You know, and if they are to ever play in a major, Sinner would be the guy walking into the major thinking that he's confident. Confident on the ability that he has to beat Carlos Alcaraz. So, Yannick Sinner plus 1,200, looking damn good. And you know I'm going to play Carlos Alcaraz at plus 175. He just lost last week in the final against Novak Djokovic in Cincinnati. What a match that we had. But that was three sets. You know, three sets is not a five-set thriller. You know, Carlos Alcaraz very well could have won a fourth set, and then he you know, he pushes it to a fifth set, and everything is up in the air against a Novak Djokovic who is aging. You know, let's not get it twisted. Novak Djokovic is not 25 years old anymore. So, you know, a five-set thriller, you never know how the body's going to react. And that's why I tend to go with these younger players in these five-set thrillers. You know, I got to look at Alcaraz and I got to look at Jannik Sinner. The future is here. And I only say that because on the women's side, we have a similar situation. Coco Gauff, her first ever big 1,000 win. Yeah, plus 750 for Coco Gauff going into the U.S. Open. She's going to have the crowd. She's going to have them in her back pocket, and they're going to push her to the finish line. I really believe that Coco Gauff, the time is now. The future is here. Plus 750, we're coming in hot. Let's go, Coco Gauff. That's right. Jessica Pegula also coming in at plus 900. Jessica Pegula just recently won a tournament as well, but she did have a letdown in Cincinnati. She had a big letdown in Cincinnati. Yeah, two Americans win back-to-back tournaments. Pegula also winning her first 1,000-level tournament. So I stoked to see them get to the U.S. Open with the fans. You know, I know that Cincinnati did not treat Jessica well, but at the same time, she was coming off playing a lot of tennis, and this is different. You know, this is a major. This is five sets. And Swiatek comes in at plus 250. Obviously, Swiatek could win this tournament with ease. Swiatek is the one to beat. You know, Swiatek is the best player right now in the world on the women's side. You know, she can't win every game. You know, she can't win every game. That's for sure. You know, Coco Gauff beat her for the first time this past week in Cincinnati. So that just goes to tell you how good Swiatek is. But, you know, I don't know how Coco Gauff is going to react going into the U.S. Open. You know, she just beat Swiatek and she just won Cincinnati. So what are we going to see going into the U.S. Open? Are we going to see a letdown? I'm not sure, but I don't think so. I think Coco Gauff continues her reign and she makes a great run at Cincinnati. Plus 750 is too hard to ignore. I'm taking Coco Gauff to win the U.S. Open. I'm also going to take Swiatek to win the U.S. Open. And I'm also going to sprinkle Pegula to get there as well. Also, again, on the men's side, we're taking Alcaraz and we're taking Jannik Sinner. I'm down with this, and I love Jannik Sinner at plus 1,200. All right, guys, that's some U.S. Open talk. The tournament starts next week. We're going to dive more into this tournament as the main draw gets going next week. You know, you just never know how somebody's going to show up. These big-time tournaments really cause confusion to some players, and it makes them question just how good they are, and it messes with their confidence, and some guys just don't rise to the occasion. So pay attention to these qualifiers and see which one could rise to the occasion and possibly take out a big name early in the rounds of the U.S. Open. You know, we see some of these qualifiers get going and then take out a big name, and we see big underdogs get big victories early in majors. I'm trying to find some guys that could possibly do that next week, and I just haven't found them just yet. You know, we're going to keep going into these qualifiers, and next week we're going to jump more into this, and we're going to get really into the U.S. Open, guys. I cannot wait. Tennis is here. The U.S. Open is here. Tennis in America, stand up. Let's go. All right, guys, next week, hit the bell. We'll be back. More great guests, more great games, more great picks, and we're rolling. This is Hit the Bell with me, Matias Burbell. Y'all stay tuned. And again, guys, one last thing for the people in Maui. Don't forget to go do this if you can. Send some money their way. They need all the help that they can get. And that is Lahaina_Ohana_Venmo. Go give them the help that they need. Go follow me on Twitter, @HitBurbell. And also, if you want to hear me, and hear Gabriel Morenci, go SiriusXM 159, 6 nights a week, 12 a.m. to 3 a.m. Eastern, Sports Rage Late Night with Gabe Morenci. I'm the producer of the show. We rock it 6 nights a week, SiriusXM 159, The Mightier 1090, and YouTube TV, Sports Rage Late Night with Gabriel Morenci. Come find us. Let's have some fun. We'll see you next week. Aloha.
You're listening to Hit the Bell with Matias Burbell on the Sports Grid Radio Network.